The good news, the EU now says they want to meet. So take this opportunity to do this. Should we then go full bore on this, Wednesday? And that's when the tariffs really ratchet up. By the way, I haven't parsed it out. I thought it was a pretty good explanation over the weekend by the Commerce Secretary of why they put the tariffs on islands that just have penguins. I'll explain that. It's being mocked, but I think there's some degree of accuracy to it. Beth Ann Rossica has an eye for issues around the Delaware Valley, second to none, particularly with kids. In two recent columns, she wrote about one, Upper Darby High School, bearing what's happened nationally. Diversity's fine, but when you have people here, huge numbers, that don't speak English, that's a problem. She also wrote about her son becoming an Eagle Scout and what that means. Let's go to Beth Ann Rossica here on Talk Radio 1210, her work usually at Broad and Liberty. Hey, Beth Ann, welcome in. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Dom. Always a pleasure to be on the show.
Well, thank you. When I saw these two things, I thought, you know, I've talked about Upper Darby, and you wrote a long piece, a lot of data in there, too. In the context of Northeast Philadelphia, various schools, Baldy is one, Lincoln, they're putting in more portable classrooms, and you have people essentially in Northeast Philadelphia that are here illegally. English speaking is way down, and you have kids now having to eat lunch at 10 o'clock in the morning, 9:45, that kind of thing, because they're overcrowded. So what's your takeaway after analyzing what's happened at Upper Darby?
Well, it's interesting, Dom. I met with Upper Darby School District actually back in December. I met with the superintendent there because for your listeners who know me, I've written many articles that have been pretty critical of Upper Darby School District and their testing results and, you know, the violence and lots of issues that are going on there. But I sat down and met with McGarry and his team for about an hour. And one of the things that struck me was he started talking about the fact that they have such a transient population of students and their numbers of non-English speaking students has increased significantly. So that kind of stuck with me. And I recently asked them for some more data. I talked with them further and I wrote this very long piece, as you mentioned, because I think what we're seeing is that the policies at the national level have really impacted what's happening in Upper Darby and similar school districts, as you mentioned. We've had a huge influx of kids, not just, you know, crossing the border illegally, but also, you know, just immigrating from other countries around the world. And it's really taking a significant amount of resources. And the problem for me is that nobody's talking about that issue. You know, immigration continues to be a hot button issue and how it's being handled and all of those things. But we're not talking about the practical realities of how many teachers do we need to hire to teach these kids who can't read and write in their own language, let alone in English. And this is a really big deal. And Upper Darby, you know, I think there's plenty of things that they could do better and reallocate resources. But I think that this is really a fair issue to talk about that, you know, the majority of their students who start with them in kindergarten do not stay with them through 12th grade. So they have this constant overturning of students coming in and out for a variety of reasons. And they don't speak English. So it's really creating a lot of staffing pressures. And, you know, McGarry talked about the state testing. And listen, I'm not a big fan of standardized tests as the only metric to measure student performance. But sadly, it's the only methodology that we have right now. But I think that he makes a pretty big case for it. Like, we're in a very unique situation. And, you know, we're being penalized for these really bad test scores that at least some of it, I'm not going to say all of it, but I think some of it is related to this transient population and to the fact that these kids can't read and write English.
I'll speak to that, too. I've never been in a school fully like that. But when there's a situation like this, the pressure seeps out It makes a hard job teaching so much harder. It gets to be chaotic. It gets to be like something is not, it's not smooth and well run. Look, I've had the guy on. I differ with him on some things, to your point, but I also think he's open to talking to people like you and me. So that's a good thing. Bethann, wanted to get a sense. The Inquirer this week ran a piece in the face of it. The guy won't come on. I don't know why. The head of the school board over in Phoenixville, among others, Springport, Phoenixville. And they said, essentially, no, we're not going to capitulate on these Trump executive orders. They tell you, well, I'd be violating state law. That's not true. In getting rid of DEI. Then they started the second round of it. They're going to hide it. I'm waiting on this, and it's a big job because you got thousands of school districts just saying they're not going to comply with this. What are you seeing, particularly the Phoenixville School District?
Right. Well, I think it's interesting, Dom, because it's not just the DEI issue, but we're also seeing this in the women, boys,
yes,
and girls,
right,
sports. So it's both of these executive orders. And the Trump administration last week sent out letters that need to be filled out by the state, by every state,
mm-hmm,
assuring the Trump administration that their state is in full compliance with these executive orders. So I actually sent a request to comment to the governor's office last Friday asking, will they be signing this, agreement that they're in compliance, and how are they handling districts that are refusing to comply? I have not heard back from them. I'm fairly certain I won't hear back from them, but I at least wanted to put them on notice that we're looking at all of this. And I don't think it's not just Phoenixville. There are multiple school districts in the southeastern Pennsylvania area that are doubling down and saying, yeah, we're just not going to do this. And we don't care about the federal funding. For, you know, a school district like Phoenixville, they may only get only $2 million a year in federal funding. But here's what I find really ironic about this, Dom, and I've written about this multiple times, is that when we were in the middle of COVID and the school districts were saying, well, we have to close schools, we have to mask kids because otherwise we lose federal funding.
Right.
Now, all of a sudden, when the ideology benefits them and
right,
what they agree with, now all of a sudden it's like, well, who cares? $2 million, it's not that much money. You know, we have money in our reserves. We'll just rely on that. And, you know, if we have to raise taxes, whatever. But I find it very, very ironic that they're going to pick and choose what they follow based on the school districts and the board's philosophy of things. And I find that very, very concerning.
Yeah, what I think some of the smarter ones are going to do, they're going to say they are complying, and then they're not going to comply. Now, with the DEI, they may be able to go underground, but the one that we'll see will be the trans stuff. That's the,
yes,
the thing that will out them ultimately. So the clock is ticking. I just hope the Trump administration, I think they have enough people, Department of Ed, they're going to target 8 or 10 of these school districts across the country, and they're going to go after them quickly. And then we're going to see if they go to taxpayers and say, well, it's only $2 million, to your point. We're okay with that. I don't think that's going to fly.
No, I agree with you. I don't think it's going to fly. And I really encourage parents who are in these school districts like Phoenixville, who are doubling down and saying they're not going to comply. If you have specific examples of DEI happening in your school district, or if you have specific examples of boys competing in girls' sports, file a complaint with the Office of Civil Rights through the Department of Education, because that's how they're going to investigate these things. So I really encourage people to be proactive, to make these, file these complaints, because if there's multiple ones coming in on a single school district, I'm guessing that the Department of Ed and OCR will prioritize investigations in those school districts.
Exactly. Parting area, congratulations, you and your son, Eagle Scout. Your sense of where the Scouts are now, though, I mean, how much has it changed? Were you in an area, was he in an area where it's pretty much like the Scouts used to be?
Yeah, so it's interesting because the article that I wrote, Dom, I really focused on the positive aspects of scouting because I do really believe that. And I talked about how scouting really helps boys, providing strong, positive male role models, and really helps develop them into strong young men. And, you know, I referenced that a lot of young boys are craving strong masculine role models. And, you know, sometimes they defer to these nut jobs like, you know, Andrew Tate, who I can't stand. But these kids, these boys are drawn to guys like him because he's super popular on social media and very, very masculine. And I find scouting to have the alternative, strong, masculine, positive role model. But to your point, you know, unfortunately, Boy Scouts has changed into scouting, and they do allow girls to be boys or to be scouts. And thankfully, our troop, and honestly, a lot of the troops in our area, you know, we don't have girls in our troop, and they do keep the girls' troops. The boys and girls are separate. So our boys never, you know, rarely come into contact with any type of girls' troops. But I do think that it's so important for boys to have these role models. And so many of the Boy Scout troops in our area do a great job. These guys volunteer their time. They spend countless hours in old school activities. They're camping and fishing and hiking and just doing all the great things, not on technology for hours at a time, which is another benefit. But I really hope that scouting will have a resurgence. And, you know, for boys that are looking for these kinds of activities, they'll seek that out. My son getting his Eagle Scout was such a huge accomplishment. And the men in his troop that helped him along the way, you know, they really helped develop him into the young man that he's become. And I'm very, very grateful for that.
Well, it starts with the mom. But a question for you, though, is it like a PhD dissertation you have to do as the final thing to be an Eagle Scout? It's been so long scouting story. You know, that's the way this goes, that I'm unclear now.
Right. Well, so the process to become an Eagle Scout is the same as it's always been. You have a certain, you know, you have to advance through all of these different ranks. You have to complete a number of merit badges and all sorts of different badges. There's requirements along the way. And then the final project is a 200-hour community service project that the scout has to plan with his advisor. They have to get approval for it. And then you have to, you know, you plan the project, you do all of the purchasing and budgeting for the project, you work with the group that you're doing the community service for, and then you have to recruit volunteers, your fellow scouts, to, you know, come and help execute the project. And then once it's done, then you have a presentation before the council, in our instance, Chester County Council, to demonstrate that you completed the project and met all of the objectives and the criteria. And it was really nice because my son's project, he did it with the preschool where he had attended many, many years ago. And so he was able to give back. They needed a shelter in place in their basement. And so he designed, you know, cleaning up the whole area, putting up lattice work around all of the equipment, painting it, building benches.
Wow.
So it really was a nice project.
Yes.
And it was so, for me, it was so gratifying for him to be able to give back to that preschool who helped him through his formative years. So it really was a nice full circle activity.
That's great stuff. We find Beth Ann Rossiga at Broad and Liberty. What are you working on next?
Well, I'm actually working on an article about the PHRC, the Pennsylvania Human Relations Commission, and about how they were able to sneak through this change in the definition of the word sex to include gender identity back in 2023. I've been doing some digging on the seven members who are the commissioners of the PHRC. There's supposed to be 11. There's only been seven since 2018. Our governor, Josh Shapiro, is supposed to appoint people to this position, and he has not appointed a single person since he has been elected in office. So I am working on that right now.
Look forward to seeing you, Beth Ann. Thank you. Thanks as always.
Thank you, Dom. Have a great day. Take care. Bye-bye.